And through I'll Do It Your Way, through God, Alcoholics Anonymous, and sponsorship, I've been sober since May 23rd, 1971. Okay. Is that okay? Like that? All right. And hi, Sharon. I want to commend you all on the great job you do and the effort that you put in to your anniversary meeting and the enthusiasm that you have. I think it's fantastic. Putting on something like this is not easy, and I think you're just fabulous, and I thank you so much for inviting me here tonight. And I want to congratulate Paul M. on 5 years of sobriety today. Where's Paul? There's Paul right there. Stand up. So Paul is very special to me because he's a sober alcoholic, and that's really why. But we have kind of a special bond, I believe, and he helped me. And he certainly didn't know he was helping me, but I met him. I don't even know if we met 5 years ago. I don't think we met face to face, but I did speak here 5 years ago, and I shared my experience, strength, and hope, and that was in May, 5 years ago. And 3 months later, I think it was in July, I was home in my tiny little apartment in Minneapolis, and it was about 2 a.m, and I was really feeling sorry for myself or whatever. I was having one of those moments that we sometimes have at 2 a.m. when there aren't very many distractions, and my mind started thinking about how old I'm getting now and what I could have done with my life if only, and what I didn't do, and all the opportunities that I missed. And really, you know, it was really getting out of hand. I was feeling very sad and very down, and I actually said out loud, I said, God help me. And I went back on my computer. I'd been on my computer, and I went back on, and there was an email on there from this person that I had never met, and it was Paul M. I have the email. I saved it. It's very meaningful to me. And in this email, he told me a story, and he told me that he had been at this meeting 5 years ago, and I believe he said he was checked into a mental hospital the next day, or planned to go there, or kill himself, or do something bad. And you know, he was despondent, and I don't know if he knew that he was an alcoholic. I think he was here for following somebody or whatever, but he was here. And you know, he identified with me, and that's what he told me in the email, and he told me that he hadn't had a drink since that day. And now it's 5 years later. And you know, God answered my prayer that night, because I get off track sometimes. I have done Alcoholics Anonymous since I got sober almost 35 years ago. I've done Alcoholics Anonymous, and it has served me very well. You know, and I just have those moments every now and then at 2 and 3 a.m. You know, like I was describing before. But as long as I stay here and keep working with other alcoholics, I just think that we're absolutely blessed, because what we give to each other is fulfilling and rewarding, and it makes me feel warm and good, you know, most of the time. And I feel so fortunate to still be here today and to still be active and involved. And gosh, we met over 30 years ago, didn't we? Sharon just celebrated 30 years. That was, you were 30, right? And we've known each other all that time. And so we watched each other go through a lot. And, you know, I can look back to, and first of all, I just, you know, Teresa, thank you for the nice introduction, and the women I sponsor here, young women, and just beautiful, and they bless me so much to, I feel so privileged that they're in my life. And Sue came over from Jamestown, and I sponsor her, and I never thought I'd sponsor anybody. I came in here my first night, and I threw up on people. And, you know, and I couldn't even imagine going from there, you know, to where my life is today. And it's not like I thought it would be along the way. You know, I wanted to see my name up in lights and be famous for something or have major accomplishments. And, you know, along the way I've done different things, and I realized, you know, there's no end for us, or for me anyway, when I'm doing something, or, you know, all I ever want is more. So, you know, because I've been sober, and because, you know, we work the steps and we work with each other, and we do what we're asked to do here, you know, we get this confidence inside that I never had it in my life. And I've been able to do a lot of things in my sobriety and try different things. But anyway, I did grow up in a family of, my family happens to be pretty alcoholic, and it's not necessarily the case with everybody. And I have 5 brothers and a sister who are all alcoholics, and my father died of alcoholism. My mother is still living, and my mother really is our professional martyr in our family. And she took care of everybody. She tried an Al-Anon meeting one time, and I think she found out that in Al-Anon they work on themselves and they don't get to just talk about us and how bad it is, so she never went back. And she's a nice lady, and I love her today. And it took me a long time here before I could say that I loved my mother, but God kept her around long enough that I could say that, you know, to myself and say it to her. But anyway, after my father died of alcoholism when I was about 6 months sober, and I had truly been blessed. Because I had come in here and I fell in love with this, and I got to take my father to some AA meetings and to buy him a big book, and my father got to sit down and tell me some of his secrets and things that he was never going to tell anybody in his life, and he got to tell me because we had this bond, you know, of sobriety. He had a short sobriety before he died. And as soon as he died, my mother really, I think, was driving down the street, and a drunk man was riding his bike, and he fell over, and she stopped and got and hooked up with this guy for a while. After all the complaining she ever did about my father and his drinking, but, you know, I accepted that about her after a while. That was her nature. I wasn't going to change her. She stayed with that guy and tried to get him better, and she'd pour his alcohol down the drain and this and that. And he finally got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so she had to move on to somebody else. But, you know, we're all doing pretty good. And my 5 brothers don't drink anymore, and my sister has she has 5 years of sobriety. And I mean, I'm just going to briefly touch on that. Now, I couldn't get anybody in my family sober when I tried very hard. I absolutely fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous when I was new, and I wanted to go to everybody and get them sober. When I was new, I got sober in California. I met a man at the meeting who was having a hard time. I brought him home, and I had a husband and 3 kids at home. I brought this man to live with us. If he can live with us and go to meetings with me, I know he's going to be okay. But it wasn't the case, and I tried to give it to everybody in my family. I didn't really know that my sister had a drinking problem. We didn't live in the same state. We weren't around each other. But a little over 5 years ago, her boyfriend sent me an email and said, "Kathleen can't quit drinking. She won't leave the house. I don't know what to do with her." And I was pretty shocked. And prior to that, my sister used to call me up all the time and tell me her life problems and the insecurities and the fears that she had, just like I had. And one day I said, "Kathleen, I know what you can do. You can go out and drink and take drugs, do whatever, get in a lot of trouble, and then you can come to Alcoholics Anonymous and your life will be good." And but of course that didn't happen, and we didn't really talk a whole lot. But I tried calling my sister, and she didn't want to talk to me. She wasn't ready to quit. And I prayed about it, because I've learned now that just sometimes I just have to sit still and pray and ask God for guidance about what to do. I mean, I wanted to run out there and save her. But I waited a little while, and then I wrote her a letter, like one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, heart to heart, like we do. And I worked for an airline, and I live in Minnesota. She was in California, and I put an airline ticket in there, and I said, if you can come here, you know, I know that you can quit drinking. And I overnighted this letter to her, and practically the minute she got it, she called me, and she was just sobbing. And I was so happy to hear her sobbing on the other end of the phone. And I knew that, you know, our language of the heart, you know, we had connected. So a few weeks later, I made arrangements to go out to California, but I made her go from where she was living and get on a train and then a bus to come where I was. I knew that I just couldn't go there and do it for her. And when I saw her get off the bus that day, I knew my sister was going to stay sober because she did something on her own, you know. I said, I've tried to carry people. I've had people come live with me. I read them the big book. I play them tapes. And they're fine as long as I'm doing that. But, you know, we have to participate in our sobriety. So my sister's been sober, you know, since that time. I guess it's going to be 6 years, actually, this month. About a week after we had, you know, met in Los Angeles and spent 3 days together, I sent her back where she lived. And she called me up and she said, I know that you already know this, but I can't tell you how good it feels for me to be in a room full of people that I know that they know how I feel. And my sister had been in therapy for probably 15 years, talking about wanting to get married and hating the job she had. And 15 years later, she still wanted to get married, and she still hated the job that she had. Now, I'd been in Alcoholics Anonymous and was probably on my third marriage by that time, and I had plenty of jobs. Because here, you know, we just, once you feel that inside, I'm kidding. I mean, I have been married 3 times, but I'm kidding about, you know, I'm not really meaning to make light of it. It's just the way that it was. But, you know, I know once I caught this thing and started getting that feeling inside and realizing how much fear I had had my whole life, you know, whether I drank alcohol or not, I was filled with fear, and that's what my life was based on before I got here, and I couldn't do anything and I wouldn't do anything because I was afraid of everything. You know, of what you thought of me and of failing and of looking stupid and all those things, and what if I can't do it, I'm not going to try. So I didn't try a lot of things. But I didn't even know all of this before I got here. I just lived my little life, you know, whatever I had to do to get by. I took out a couple of my high school annuals the other day because I was trying to look somebody up. So I looked for where my picture was, and there are no pictures of me. I mean, they were there, but they're ripped out, or I had ink through them. Because I've always hated myself. My whole life, I hated myself. I didn't really know that. I acted, you know, I think we just develop defense mechanisms along the way, you know, and I didn't really know that I hated myself. I acted like I hated everybody else, and having 5 brothers, I would just fight and physically fight with people and swear and act bad. And like all of us, like every one of us in this room, I did everything in my life to get attention. And it didn't matter if it was praise, if it was good attention, or if it was bad attention. It made no matter. So I just, I barely made it through high school because I did goofy things and people laughed at me, and I got in trouble, and I didn't care because people were paying attention to me. I got pregnant when I was 15 years old, and this is a long time ago, so it's not, you know, it was not accepted. It was very bad at the time, and I was in Catholic school. I didn't have a boyfriend. I never went on a date, so it was kind of mysterious. Like the, you know, like the Immaculate Conception, we say, and the thing is, it happened in a stable. So it truly did. So, but you know, there I was, just this little 15-year-old girl who just, you know, would you love me, care about me? I don't know why I felt so unloved or that nobody cared about me. But that's how I felt, and I guess that I thought sex was love or whatever you wanted from me, you know, just so you paid attention to me. So, you know, it is kind of interesting always for me to look back on myself at that time and that little 15-year-old girl and the man that was involved, because he was an absolute bum, transient guy who lived up at this stable in this little shack. And but he paid attention to me, so what difference did it make? And I just look back on that, like, you know, how my life could have been had I not found Alcoholics Anonymous somewhere along the way. I always drank. It just seems like I always drank. In my family, though, it was kind of hard to get your hands on it all the time because everybody was drinking. And I know one time I went to the kitchen and I snuck in there, and I was probably 13 or 14 years old, and I wanted this big bottle of vodka that was up in the cupboard and nobody was around, and I got it and I took the top off and I drank out of the bottle, and it was pure water. And so one of my brothers had gotten to it before I did. And my father had he always bought a keg of beer on the weekend, and we put it in the garage in this refrigerator, and I had big mayonnaise jars that I saved up all week long, and I'd get down there when nobody was there, and I'd fill up all my jars with beer and put them in my closet. I didn't have a reason why I took a drink at that time. I just drank. It just seems like I mean, it was the natural thing for me to do, I suppose, because I'm an alcoholic. So, I got pregnant. I was in Catholic school. They didn't want me to stay there. They didn't make maternity uniforms back then. They probably do now, but my parents were very ashamed of this, and they sent me away to live with a family and take care of these people's kids and you know, have this baby and give it up for adoption. It was just, you know, it was just so. I felt like a little child myself, and I had to go live with these people and do their work and all that, and I just felt so lonely, and I was calling my friends and telling them that, I mean, my parents were pretending I was living in another state because they were ashamed and embarrassed, and I was calling my friends and telling them how big I was getting and this and that. But anyway, it's not a good start for a person, you know, and but I went back, and I barely managed to finish high school, and because I didn't care about studying. I cared about you paying attention to me and making you laugh and doing crazy things, and so I was always getting in trouble. The night of my graduation, I got very drunk. I wasn't allowed to graduate with the class because I had been in trouble, and I sat behind a gas station and drank out of a bottle and drove home and threw up all over myself and the car and my mother's car. And I remember driving it home and opening up both front doors and getting a hose and squirting it out. And you know, it just seems like I went on until I got here. It was like that. But the circumstances were different. I tried so hard to carry on with my life and do. I was trying to hide my drinking, actually, hide the fact that I had a problem. And I was just trying to carry on with my life. And now I'm supposed to get married. And a man asked me to marry him, so we got married. And he's a very nice man. I had no reason to get married to him. We had three children, and it was then, you know, trying to live this life in this neighborhood, being a wife and a mother and a neighbor. You know, my drinking just progressively got worse and worse, and I was in this nice house, which we couldn't afford, and we didn't pay our bills, and I was supposed to pay the bills, but I kept them in a big brown paper bag in the closet, and I didn't like answering the phone, and I, you know, just drank whatever I could get my hands on trying to take care of these kids. I would climb over the back fences and go into my neighbors' houses and take what I could out of their houses, pills, alcohol, money, whatever. And then I'd talk with them on the street like I was their normal neighbor. And I'd feel really bad about the way that I was, but I didn't know what I was going to do about it, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. So You know, driving here today, I drove in from Minneapolis, and my youngest son, Joe, lives near St. Cloud. So I stopped and met him for lunch with his new son, Byron, from Guatemala. And but anyway, it was really nice having lunch with him today. And Joe was 1 year old when I got sober. And I didn't, he's adopted, and I didn't want to go get him when I got the phone call, because I already knew that I couldn't quit drinking. There wasn't a doubt in my mind. I could not quit drinking. I was locking the other boys in the bedroom because I didn't want to go outside and find them. I had alcohol in my breath. I didn't want anybody to smell it. I had no hope that anything was ever going to be any different, but I didn't want to tell them I didn't want to go get Joe, because then what's going to happen? They're going to get to take the other ones away. Well, I'll just struggle along a little. I'll just do whatever. I mean, I just tried to, I was just faking it all the time and hiding inside my house and drawing the drapes and peeking out at my neighbors, and but then trying to act normal, you know, trying to make them think I was okay. My husband, Joe, would mark the bottles that we had in the house, the alcohol, and I'd have to drink out of those bottles eventually because I didn't have anything else, and I knew he marked them, so I made new marks. I'd turn them upside down, I'd turn them sideways, so he could never find his mark. And sometimes he'd look at them and he'd look at me, and I would just sit there and I just thought, I'm not giving up yet. I mean, I'm not really caught. So one time I drank all of our vodka and I put water in the bottle, and we had unexpected company come over, and he made them water and tonic and they drank it. And I was terrified that night. I remember just sitting there just terrified that they were all going to put their drinks down, point at me and take me away. And I just kept picturing myself in the basement of a mental hospital. That's where I was going to go. I did put my boys in the car one time, and I drove over. I was living in Ventura County, California. There's a state mental hospital there, Camarillo. And I put my boys in the car one night, and I drove over there, and I sat at the end of the driveway, and I wanted somebody to stop and say, "Why are you sitting here?" And I would then say, "Because I need help." I didn't know who to go to or how to ask for help or what was wrong with me, but I thought maybe somebody there would help me. One night I put the boys in the car and I drove to a retreat house where I thought the priest lived, and I knocked on the door and I was gonna ask a priest to help me. And it was a caretaker, and he said nobody was there. And you know, it was just getting harder and harder and harder. And the day came, I just, we had people over to watch the Super Bowl. This was in January, and I did drink once after that, so my sobriety's in May, but we had people to watch the Super Bowl. I made drinks at the Punch Bowl all day long. I never left it. I just kept drinking, and when the last man left our house that night about 6 o'clock, I walked out the door and got in the car with him, and he drove away, and I was just goofing off again, and he took me somewhere else, and we drank, and then I called my husband a couple hours later, and I asked him to come get me. And he was really mad at me, and he came and got me. He got a neighbor to watch the kids, and he came and got me. And he, for the very first time, he started talking to me and saying, "You would not do the things that you do. You wouldn't act the way that you acted if you didn't drink so much." And I couldn't help it. I tried really hard not to drink. I had been hospitalized before that for different things, and I would think, see, I've been in the hospital for 5 days and I haven't had a drink and I'm okay. And I'd try so hard every day. I'd say, "Please, God, help me not to take a drink." And then I would find a reason why I could just have that one drink. So this day when Joe said that to me, I knew that I couldn't quit drinking. So we went in the house. I picked up the phone and called this old boyfriend of mine that I had in high school. And this was years later, but when I have a boyfriend, somebody I really like, I think about them a lot. So they're alive in my mind, so I feel I can just call somebody after 10 years and say, "Hi, it's me," and they're going to know who it is. But I called this guy and I asked him to come pick me up. We only had one car, and I didn't want to take the car. I wanted to leave Joe and the boys, and I knew I was a bad wife and a bad mother. And So my husband came in the room and he said, I don't care where you go, but you can't run away from it. And, you know, it's so close when I look back, because I did want it. I was just going to leave them. But he said that to me, and I believe, you know, it was some kind of divine intervention, although I don't believe that. I believe this gift of sobriety is offered to everyone. It's not like we're chosen above other people, but it was my moment, and something happened to me that made me call my brother-in-law, who was a Catholic priest. And he lived in Pennsylvania. I was living in California. And I was just going to ask him to pray for me. So it seems now that I took the first step. He answered the phone, which was very unusual. And I was finally able to tell somebody for the very first time in my life that I could not quit drinking. I said those words, I can't quit drinking. And he told me to go to an AA meeting. He had been just to see what it was like so he could help people. And so we did make it to a meeting that night. The meetings out there started, a lot of them started at 8:30 and they were over at 10 o'clock. And Joe had his opportunity and he wasn't going to miss this opportunity. And he got the neighbor to watch the boys. And I had been drinking all day, quite a lot. And I was very bloated. I was very heavy. I was bored in my house, locked in the house, drinking with the boys. My hair was longer, it was dyed, it was bad. I didn't know how to dye my hair, and I would just pour bleach on it, I guess. And you could just crunch my hair at that time, and it would fall out. And I was really very heavy. My face was red and purple. It really, truly was. Most of the time, I had broken blood vessels in my eyes, because I just got sick a lot. But I put on this bright orange polyester pantsuit that was in my closet. I don't know, and it was probably something I shoplifted, which I was doing, and I don't know why, because most of the stuff I took, it was ugly. But it was just something I did. And this thing was so tight on me because I was so heavy and bloated, and so it zipped up the back. Now it's strangling me, so my face is brighter. And we got to the meeting, and it was almost over. We didn't know that, but we finally found this AA meeting, and we walked in the door, and there were probably 30 people there sitting in folding chairs, and there were two seats on the aisle, and we sat down. The minute the meeting was over, 30 people came over to me. And I found out later they had not had a newcomer in a long time. And if you're new here tonight, we do love you so much, and we need you so much, and we're glad that you're here. And they all 30 people came to me, and they started offering me, I saw literature and a piece of cake and a cup of coffee and phone numbers, and that's when I started throwing up on them. And once I start, I don't stop. I ran outside, and all 30 people, I swear, came outside. They just, like a herd of people, the whole meeting came outside, and I was in the parking lot throwing up, and they were all around me in a big circle. And they were, a man said, "We alcoholics are such lucky people, we're chosen by God." And I was throwing up in the middle of the circle. Like, I did not believe that night. I can guarantee you that. I thought my life was over. But anyway, that was my very first meeting. The next day, these ladies came over to my house. Three ladies who were much, much older than I was. They were very old, and they were in their 50s. And they came over. And they sat in my living room, and they talked to me. And, you know, I did feel closer to those ladies that day than I had felt to anybody in my life. And that's what I was talking about before. It's just the language of the heart that we speak, that Paul heard. You know, just he heard an AA speaker, and I'm sure he just, you know, he's been sober since that time because he heard this. We have this connection. They just sat and talked to me in my living room, and I just, you know, a weight was lifted from me. It truly was. And I went to a meeting with them that night, and when it came time, "Are you a newcomer?" I just remember I just felt so bad, and putting my hand up and putting my head down, I felt ashamed, and I didn't get it yet. But that was my beginning, and that was in January, and I did okay during that time, but I found, for some reason, I had to drink one last half gallon of Spignata wine, And it actually started with a couple of pills that I took from my mother's house, and my mind said that I could take some pills if I wanted to, because this was Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not get a sponsor right away, and I believe I didn't get a sponsor because I was so afraid to walk up to somebody and ask if they'd be my sponsor. It was it was hard. I don't like all of us. I don't like hearing the word no. Really my whole life I didn't think people wanted me around. I kind of feel like I'd be walking up to a group of people and that's when they kind of turn and see me and, you know, go off in different directions. And so it was kind of hard to walk up to somebody and ask them to be my sponsor. But again, if you're new, we want you to do that, and we love you and we want to help you. So if you don't have a sponsor and you're here tonight, please don't leave here without a sponsor. So I didn't really have anybody to talk to during that time, and we need people to talk to. We just need someone to check in with. I have a sponsor, and I've had a sponsor for a long time. I have a home group. Not a whole lot has changed as far as what I learned to do in the beginning and what I do now. Not a whole lot has changed. And I go to a lot of meetings, and I sponsor people, and I'm sponsored, and I have a home group, and I show up. And so I had a half gallon of Spignata wine, and actually, when I first came in here, I can't see this anyway. I don't know why I'm pretending. You have one voicemail, Lynette. 7:30. Did I throw it out? No, I don't know. Anyway. Oh, yeah. You know what? I thought I was really bad when I got here, and I had these things and these secrets and these things I was ashamed of and I was never going to tell anybody. And then I came here for those months, and I heard you getting up telling your stories, and they'd be horrible stories, and people would laugh at them. And then I'd sit there and I'd think, see, I'm nothing again. I thought I was real bad, but I'm not that bad. So I always wanted to be the best or the worst or something. I don't want to be in the middle. So when I drank that wine that night, I really actually wanted to get arrested. And then I could come back and say I had gotten arrested. It was how exciting it was. And there was always drama going on in my life. It didn't matter what it involved. There was always drama going on. But I drank this wine, and I had this great big green bottle, and I was driving on the Ventura Freeway, and I threw it out the window. And I thought, certainly, I'm going to get arrested for that. And nobody saw me. Nobody cared. So I went home and one more time threw up and went to sleep in it. And hopefully that's been my last drink. And my sobriety has been an absolute adventure and so exciting. And what a journey it's been. We have each other and we're going to be okay. If we don't take a drink, we're going to be okay. I believe, you know, I quit drinking alcohol, which was just the beginning for me. I had no idea what was in store for me. We have the steps, which help us to learn what we need to learn here. When I first came in and I saw that step four and what I was supposed to do, I used to sit there and I'd say, I can never do that. I can never tell anybody this or this or this or this. But of course, the time came when I was able to do that. I don't have any secrets anymore. I have a lot, just complete freedom inside. And it is rocky sometimes. It's a rocky road that we're on here. We're babies. I was anyway. I had never matured. I had no emotional maturity. So everything that happened to me was big, major, traumatic. Joe and I stayed married for a couple of years. The first sponsor actually that I had was a lady that came up to me at my meeting, and she said, let me be your sponsor. I was so grateful to her because I still couldn't just walk up to anybody and ask them. And that lady was just absolutely wonderful to me, and got me through a lot of the steps. And I remember the day I was supposed to do my fifth step, I was still scared. And I called her up and I said, I'm resigning from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am so glad that, well, actually, I mean, I had been asked to lead a meeting, and I was probably about 9 or 10 months sober around this time. I really thought it was a privilege to be asked to lead a meeting. Coming up here scared me. I used to just be like this, and I couldn't stop it. But in my group, they wouldn't let me not come up here because it scared me. So I had been asked to lead the meeting, and I had been looking forward to that. I thought it was really an honor. But I was supposed to do my fifth step before I led the meeting, and I just didn't think I could go through with it. You know, I hung up from her, and I spent about 3 hours just crying and sobbing and hurting really bad because I think I knew I needed to do it, but I was afraid. And, you know, just thank God I talked to a few people and I ended up doing it. And I can look back on when I was finished telling her all these things because I feel I did a pretty good job, the best I could at the time. And it was pretty much a story of here are all the bad things that I did. I hadn't gotten to the point yet where I knew what was behind, you know, why I did all those bad things. It comes in time. It just comes in time. But I remember when I did it, I really felt stronger that day. I just felt all like I could stand up tall and I could go lead that meeting, and I really was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous now. It just made me feel so strong and so good that I did something that was so hard to do. And, you know, I have had the privilege of sponsoring people and hearing other people's four steps, and what a gift this has been to me, because I think that we all feel different, you know. And I don't care what you said in the beginning about, you know, you're not different. I would always secretly know that I was different, just a little bit different, and that you really didn't quite understand me. I don't think that you really understood the intensity of the emotions that I was feeling inside. That's what I believed. But over the years, because I've been able to sponsor people and work with other people, I'm not any different. When you hear other people talking about the same things that you've talked about, and what a freedom it is to finally know inside I'm not different from anybody. So I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to hold back. I don't tell lies anymore. I don't have to check myself all the time. It's really a wonderful life. And I told you I barely made it through high school, and then here I am sober, and I have these three little boys, and Joe and I were trying to make it, but we eventually got a divorce. And I had no education, and life was a struggle for a long time, financially and trying to get to meetings. And we were talking tonight about, you know, I have these boys, and I couldn't leave them home alone, and we didn't really bring... I couldn't bring them to the meetings, and I didn't really have any money, but somehow, I mean, I was told to just scrape the money together and get a babysitter and go to the meetings, and I was at least 5 meetings, you know, a week, because I just had to be. And somehow we managed, and we lived through that. And somewhere along the line, I began to understand the concept of God and what this power greater than myself is. And I was raised pretty much in the Catholic faith, and I grew up with that God. One of the gifts that I got was to sponsor 2 nuns, and Sharon sponsors one of them now, but I got her when she was brand new, and it was really nice because I was really mean to her. And and I said, 7 meetings a week or else, sister, and I got the ruler, and she's a... I'll tell you what, speaking of, you know, fourth and fifth steps, when this woman did her fifth step with me years and years ago, she finished and we were both sobbing. And I'll tell you why I was sobbing. I was taught by the nuns, and I was afraid of these women. And here again, It's the heart-to-heart language that we have. She's a Catholic nun. She's the principal of the school. She can go talk to anybody, and she never had been able to in her whole life. And she's talking to me, the person who came in and threw up all over everybody. And we're up in the convent doing this step work. And it just blew me away. That again showed me the power of our program and the miracle that we have here. And I don't know where I was. It doesn't really matter, does it? It's been, it doesn't matter. You're all thinking of yourselves. I know that. Joe and I got divorced. Life was difficult. It was a struggle financially. I never had any money. I'd be out in my car looking under the seats for pennies and nickels. And you know what? But I didn't miss my AA meetings. I mean, this is where I got it. And then I could go home and continue on. And I got a job as a dental assistant because that's all I could do. And I was filled with self-pity for years. Poor me with no education and these three boys and no money. And you'd feel bad too if you were in my shoes. And people, I got sober in a very tough group and they just called me on it. And that I was filled with self-pity. And I didn't think that was fair or very nice for them to say that because I did have a tough life. Didn't they get it? And it was just a really wonderful group for me because they just made me keep moving forward. And I did try to go to college, and I realized somewhere along the way that I was really going to college because I was going to impress you more and you would think more of me if I had this education. I didn't really want to go to college. And I had these boys and I had this job and I had my meetings and I always had to, you know, give that up. I am so glad that in the beginning people told me that Alcoholics Anonymous had to come first in my life. And I am so glad that I knew that was true. And that I was able to just keep coming to meetings and coming to meetings and coming up here even if I was like this and everything shook. And doing this kind of thing is what's made me able to go out in the world and do pretty much whatever I want to do and not be afraid. Or if I am afraid, so what? Just walk through it and do it anyway. But I've had a lot of different jobs, a lot of different careers. I married a second time, and we were not good for each other before we got married. It was the dance of death, but you know how we love to dance that dance here, don't we? So I was going to break up with him or not see him so much, and then he said, good, I'm glad you told me because I bought a ring already. And then I felt so bad. God. That's terrible. Oh, I've hurt him so much. I'm so important, right? I've hurt him. And so we got married because of that. And after that marriage ended, after about 3 years, something else I've learned that's been invaluable to me along the way is, what is my part in this? I don't care what happens out there. I had a part in it. And if I can find my part in something, I'm home free. And he didn't make me do anything, and I don't care what he did to make me feel like that marriage had to end. You know, what was my part in this? And to me, my part was that we shouldn't have gotten married in the first place, and I must have a really huge ego to think that I had to marry him or he wouldn't be happy or something, you know. So he certainly wasn't happy 3 years later when I disappeared out of his life and got on an airplane and flew away to Hawaii and stayed gone for 6 months. I don't think that made him very happy. But, and I was able to come back and I was able to have lunch with him and I was able to say I'm sorry for the way that I handled things. That was a freedom that I got here because I could never do that. I'd want to talk about, but you know, you did this, and if you hadn't done that, I wouldn't have had to do this. But I didn't have to do that anymore, and what a great freedom that was that day. I apologized for the way that I handled the situation. And prior to this happening, and when we were trying to make this marriage work, we had my three sons living with us. And their dad, Joe, is a very good man, and he had married a very nice lady named Patty, who had been a nun, and she had left the convent. And after what we went through as a married couple, he needed to have this nun person, you know. And no, Patty is a wonderful woman. And Joe used to call me, and he'd say, Patty and I would love to have the boys come live with us if you'd like them to. And I used to say, well, thank you very much, but no. And inside, I just thought, there's no way. I used to say to myself, these are my boys. I love them. I need them. They're my boys. I thought a mother should take care of her children, and they're mine, and I love them. But because along the way I've been learning how to pray, and I've been learning to get on my knees and ask God for guidance and then stay out of the way, and I've been learning to just turn my life and my will over and stop acting so impulsively on things and just throughout the day ask God to help me, I was able, you know, one day I was saying to myself, I could never go let them live with Joe and Patty because I love them. And then I heard, if you love them so much, why don't you do what's right? And it was one of those moments, like, who said that? And Tom and I weren't getting along. We had just terrible times together and big fights, and the boys were living with us. I had learned then that I had to listen to that. You know, if you love them so much, do what's right. And little by little, I was learning to be not so selfish, you know, and thinking about me and what I want all the time. And I prayed about it, and I asked, I said, God, if that message is coming from you, then I need you to give me the strength and the courage to do this in the right way. And I called my sponsor, and he said to call Joe and Patty and just let them know, and they could discuss it. And so I went out there one day, and the boys thought that I was coming out there to pick them up because they had been staying out there for a couple weeks. And I had the car all filled with their stuff. And they ran up to the car. Now, Joe and Patty had a house and a swimming pool and a dog, and they lived in a real nice neighborhood. And I was a crazy woman, you know, fighting with this man, leaving and coming and going and whatever. And so I drove up, and the boys ran out to the car, and they said, are we going to live here? Because they saw everything. And you know what? It didn't. And I said, if you want to, we're going to come talk about it. And they were so happy. And I was able to think, if I was a kid, I'd be happy too. And, you know, it didn't hurt my feelings that they wanted to live there. That was different for me. So, you know, it's not just not drinking here. That's not what it hasn't been for me. It's things like that where I have this freedom now that I can participate in life and do what's best for everybody. And the boy, Joe and Patty were so great. They said, you can live here too if you want to. It would be okay. And I actually stayed there about two nights, and then I thought, no, I just really can't do this. This is not right. And but I'd be out there, and Patty and I would be at the kitchen sink with our back to the door, and we'd be cooking. You know, I mean, I'd be out visiting them, and one of the boys would come to the door, and he'd say, Mom, and we would both, I would just kind of look at each other, like we were trying to be respectful of each other, like, well, maybe he's calling you, or maybe he's calling you. And then the boys said, this is not going to work, you know, so they named her Pom for Patty Mom, and Nom, Nancy Mom. And, you know, it's just because of what we learn here in our steps and working with other people that life can be like that. And I've had a lot of exciting times. I felt so stuck as a dental assistant. That's all I can do is suck water out of people's mouths. That's how it sounds. That's what I did all day long. And I didn't make very much money. And, so I was like, who knows? It doesn't matter when it was, who I was married to or who I wasn't married to. But I remember asking God, okay, you know, I really need another career, and I need you to put something in front of me and help me and guide me and show me what I can do, because I don't really know what I can do. So I'd go to my meeting, and everybody knew I was thinking about how what I could do to earn more money. And one person said, you should go into sales. I said, no, I don't really like sales. And then I talked to another person. They said, I think you'd be good in sales. No, I don't think so. I swear, I had to hear it 8 times before I thought, you know, I asked God to help me. Now, God speaks through people. So I did start looking into that, and I was able to do that. And it enabled me to earn more money. And then somebody dared me to do stand-up comedy. I always did everything I was dared to do, you know, pretty much. And so it used to get me in a lot of trouble, but I started doing stand-up comedy for a little while. That was scary. That was really, really scary. But you know what? I was able to do it. And then a few years ago, I don't know, maybe it's been 3 years ago now, in the cities, I wanted to do it again. And I was in my women's meeting one Tuesday night, and I really, you know, life is really interesting if you listen. If you turn it over and ask God for guidance, and then you just kind of pay attention. And I was looking around the room, and I saw these three women, and I thought, you know what, the four of us should do a show together. And then I got them after the meeting and asked them, and they said that would be fun, because they were all actress and writer and comedian. And so they came over, and I said, well, you know, wouldn't it be fun? And they're all, yeah. And I said, you know, we won't do it unless we make a commitment. And so we have to rent a theater. So one of them went out and got the place and signed the contract and then called us all. And that night we're all just like, what have we done? We don't even know what we're going to do, and we just rented a theater. We told the people we knew what we were going to do. Yes, we have a plan for our show. We had no plan. But you know what? That's the only way I know how to get things done. And we did a good show, too. Didn't we? It was good. It was fun, and we put it together. But it's my life just feels like an adventure. It's exciting in that way. It doesn't have to be the excitement that I once craved, which, you know, got me in trouble, and I dig these deep holes, like when I ran away to Hawaii and stayed there, you know. And then I came back, and I was standing outside of LAX, and I thought, I have a $5 bill in my wallet, and I don't have any place to go. And my kids are with Joe and Patty, and poor me again. And I was like 12, 13 years sober, and I just felt like, seems like worse than I did when I was brand new. But you know what? And I went around to people, what should I do? What should I do? I get this, I guess you should go to meetings and work with newcomers. Well, I don't even have a phone. I don't have a phone. I don't have a place to live. Work with newcomers anyway. And it's always the basics. It's always the same thing. You know, it's like, but I'm 13 years sober and I should not be in this position. Well, you are. So, you know, work with newcomers and go to meetings. And I didn't think that was fair. I thought I had worked really hard for 12 or 13 years and I had always worked with people. I shouldn't be in this mess. But, you know, I was. And so, you know, over time I started getting more healthy. And that's why I started doing comedy too, because it was exciting, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't get me in a mess like that. And I'm married to Ed now, and, you know, we've been married 20 some years, but we haven't lived together for about the last 8 or 9. He was living. That's a really, really wonderful way to have a marriage. He was in California and I was in Minnesota. He's a very nice man, but he did just come back to live with me in February, and it's been kind of a struggle because he's been healthy all his life, and all of a sudden he got a pacemaker and Parkinson's at the same time, and so it's been a struggle. And you know, again, it's like if I sat down and thought, this is not how it should be, this is not how I want it to be, and my life should be different right now, I'd be in a big mess. And all I know to do now is to get up every morning and live that day to the fullest. That's the only day that I have. The hour in front of me is the only hour that I have, and I have to focus on what's in front of me. If I really truthfully and honestly turn my life and my will over to God, then I just better do what's in front of me and not think about it and not talk about it. And you know, I used to want to tell you how bad everything was, and it just makes it worse. So I just get up and I ask God for guidance and strength and courage, and show me how I can best serve you today. And I just go on about my business, and if I do that, everything is just fine. And I do, you know, what am I now? I'm a flight attendant now. So that was a new thing, you know. I mean, I've been doing this a little while, and that just happened because a woman I sponsored stopped by my house before she went on an interview to be a flight attendant. And I thought, well, that sounds like a pretty good job, so I'll go with you, okay? And so I'm a flight attendant now. And it's just a job, you know. When I go to work, I do work like I do the rest of my life. Show me how I can be of service when I go to work today, and that makes my job okay, you know. And life is really good if I stay in the moment, and if I stay in these rooms, and if I don't get off track, and if I just go to the regular meetings that I always go to, and I call my sponsor, and I answer my telephone, and I get on my knees at least once in the morning and once at night, and you know, my life is good. I hope that if you're brand new, that you stick around, that you get some phone numbers, that you get a sponsor. If you're feeling no hope, right now, that's how we all felt when we came here. And there's a lot of hope in these rooms. And you know, I used to think when I got sober, okay, I'm not drinking, everything should be good. And it just quickly, when I started, you know, after Joe and I got divorced, or even before we got divorced and I was dating, okay, get it? But relationships. I mean, I was telling the girls at dinner, I've spent half my time spying on people. I was always parked outside somebody's house, hiding behind hedges, looking in windows. I mean, you had to like me more than you liked anybody else. And I you know, didn't obviously trust people, and I wasn't trustworthy either. In order to trust people, I had to become trustworthy. But I was always spying on people, so you know, that's a difficult thing. It's not just that. It's like I've done reams and reams of writing in my sobriety. It's been very therapeutic for me to start uncovering the layers, and I've done other fourth and fifth steps, and I've had people sit with me all night long when I didn't think I could make it through a night because my heart hurt so much, my guts were coming out at this, you know, I'm not going to live through this. And I did live through it, obviously, and I don't even remember their names now, who it was that I couldn't, you know, live without. So I'm just trying to, you know what, if you have that happen to you, you just go get some, you know, talk to a woman, man, whoever. And if you're a woman, talk to a woman. I wanted to clear that up, because certainly somebody's going to twist that one around. But there's a lot of hope in these rooms for us. There's a lot of love, and there's a great life ahead for all of us. Thank you so much again for all the effort that you put in, and congratulations on your 7th year.